Welcome to the Honor the Gift podcast. I am your host, Art McCracken. I specialize in transformational leadership and high performance coaching. I've worked with hundreds of companies and thousands of individuals along the way, helping them achieve greater outcomes in all aspects of their life. I'm a speaker and writer, but at the end of the day, none of that holds a candle to being a husband, father, and friend. I believe the greatest gift in our mortal existence is the gift of choice. How we honor that gift will shape the eternities. I also believe that career is a way of being and not just a way of life. And when you figure that out, by learning to let go of the charades and leaning into growth, life just seems to unlock itself. I know this because I've lived it. Quite simply, my calling is people experience living true. Thank you for being here. Thank you for making the commitment to lean into growth. I honor your journey. Now, let's do this. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Honor the Gift podcast. I have promised you people of impact and influence. This next guest I've been acquainted with now for a few years. I'm grateful for his friendship and mentorship. His work has certainly impacted my life and continues to do so. Dr. Benjamin Hardy is an organizational psychologist. He's the author of 8 books, which have sold nearly 1 million copies. His work focuses on the psychology of exponential growth and transformation, future self-science, and entrepreneurship. In 2018, he and his wife went from 0 to 5 kids in 1 year, adopting 3 from the foster system and having twins. They now have 6 kids and live in Orlando. Dr. Hardy, welcome to the show, my friend.
Absolutely, Art. Love chatting with you, man.
It's always so good to have you.
Every time I talk to you, it's very, very, very good stuff, man.
There's so much we could talk about today. First, thank you again for being here. Congratulations on your newest book, 10X is Easier Than 2X. I'm going through it now for the 3rd time. I love it. I've handed out I don't know how many copies. It seems to be getting some serious traction in lots of different industries and areas of thought leadership, as it should. Give us your 30-second summary pitch of why 10X is easier than 2X.
So, absolutely. There's so many grains to go down, but I guess to give you the summary pitch as much as I can, as people, we have 2 options. We can either use the present to create the future, which is a 2X approach. And that's really where you take your past and your present and continue doing more of it in the future. And that's honestly the typical approach. That's the linear approach. And so using the 80-20 perspective, if you want to go 2X, you can keep 80% of your life right now to go 2X. It's not very transformational. You just continue doing more of what you're doing. Whereas 10X is a fundamentally different approach. It starts with imagination. It starts with wanting. It starts with abundance. It starts with being really honest with yourself and really deeply getting to know yourself and what you most want, not what you have to do, what you most want, and then making the future seemingly impossible. And then rather than letting the present shape the future, you take this future and you use it to shape your present. You use it to filter your present. You use it to make decisions. And the powerful part about it, one of the powerful parts about it is that because that future, that 10X future is so big, almost nothing you're doing right now is going to get you there. Almost everything you're doing right now will get you to 2X, which makes it really complicated and confusing and hard to discern the signal from the noise. But the 10X future, which you most deeply want, almost nothing you're doing right now will get you there. So it forces you to be a lot more honest about what are the few things that matter that I'm going to go all in on, and what's the majority of things that are noise that, if I'm honest with myself, I should probably let go of. And as you begin to let go of those old ideas, those old stories, and you go deep on what you most want, deep on the few things that matter, and you 10X those things, then you transform your life. And so, I mean, that's the simple way. It's either you're letting your present shape your future, or you're letting a really profound, powerful future shape your present. And if it's a huge future, there's not much you can do to get there. And so it's going to really simplify your life and help you focus on the few things that matter. And then you got to face the honest truth of what are most of the things I'm doing right now that are 2X, not 10X. Most of the things I'm doing right now got me here and won't get me there.
Awesome. Thank you. That's a good.
That was probably 2 minutes. I don't know. I mean, that's such a big question. You don't want me to explain such a big idea in one swoop.
I baited you there because we're going to talk a lot about, I guess, some of the principles that have really stood out to me and that I think weave this whole concept of what I would maybe describe as moving from this linear way of being
to an aligned
linear and exponential.
Yes, right? Linear and exponential. And so 10x is, it's a buzzword. It's probably thrown around more often than not in growth circles. But what you're describing is truly leaps and bound effort, leaps and bound growth. But the way that you describe it is, this isn't just grinding it out, doing the work, putting in the effort. It's finding a path that's more aligned and more integral with who you are as a human being and what you desire. So as we dive into this, I want to hit some of these key principles that you talk about. And what I appreciate about your writing, your research, the thoughts that you share with the world, you take these concepts that maybe have been thrown around and not fully fleshed out for personal application, and they've been surface level. And so you go deep. One of the first principles you hit in this book is the Pareto principle, but there's a twist. So walk us down the path of Pareto's law and how this applies to moving from linear to exponential growth.
Yeah, so Pareto, I think that there's so many amazing applications. I mean, I even was talking to you prior to this conversation about an application to this idea that I'd never even considered before this morning. But, you know, core concept is this. In every situation, most of the situation is noise, right? So this is the 80 versus the 20. 80% of your work is busy work. It's busy, it's not productive. So what are the few things that are important, not urgent? The 20% of things, you know, it's really a principle that shows you that a few things really matter. A few things have huge leverage, and most things are a distraction. Like, that's really the whole idea. 80 and 20 is just a way of giving it a little bit of form. And so how we talk about it in the book is obviously that if you're going for 2x, then you can keep 80% of your life. You can keep the 80% because you're not really going for transformation. You're just going for continuation. You're going for linear growth. You're taking the present and pushing that off into the future. And so that approach is non-transformational, and it also fails to appreciate the value of your future self, that your future self can be fundamentally different from who you are, massively different. It also fails to appreciate your past, about how much you've transformed in the past. And so that's basically the basic framework of the book is that to go for 2x, you can keep 80% of what you're doing right now. You just have to tweak 20%. And 2x, how I look at it, is really just doing more of the same. It's kind of like trying to crawl faster. So if a baby is going for 2x, it just wants to learn how to crawl faster. Whereas if a baby's going 10x, it's learning how to walk, right? And walking is a fundamentally different game than crawling. And so 10x is where the future is so massive that you can only keep 20%. It's a filter. It's a filter for the present. And it says that if you're going to go for this future that's so big, even seemingly impossible. And I obviously go into the research on impossible goals and about how it's such a useful frame because most of what you're doing won't get you there. But if you're going for something you believe to be impossible, and I guarantee, Art, if you really think about it, I know you're living a life that your former self would have thought was impossible. And you've chosen to summit mountains that did seem impossible through commitment, through choice, through faith. But when you go for something that's impossible, you can't operate from past assumptions. That's one of the values. When you're going for 2x, you are operating from past assumptions. When you're operating from a 10x or a seemingly impossible future, you don't know how to get there, which is the beautiful part, because then you can start looking for it. But to the 80-20 principle, when you're going for 10x, only the relevant 20% matters. And the goal is to weed everything else out and to 10x the quality and the value of the 20% that really matters. Go deep on that, make that 10 times better, and then 10 times bigger will take care of itself.
I think in my own life where I've found specific application of this, and like you say, it can be applied in so many areas of our life, but I learned this 8 or 10 years ago. I had the opportunity to have a one-on-one conversation with one of my daughters. The conversation was, there was one question that I asked and I just listened, and we were on a drive. I said, "Hey, I got to go run an errand. Can you hop in the pickup and let's go for a drive?" So we were gone maybe 30, 40 minutes is all. And I remember asking her the question, "What's it like being on the other side of dad?" And I just listened. And the reason I bring this up in the 80-20 concept is so many years and days and weeks went by where I felt like I was present for my family by just being in the home, being available, engaging in a proximal way, which would be the 80%. The 20% that made the biggest difference was taking a few minutes and asking a question and listening and being one-on-one. And when I look at impact on relationship, impact on the aspirations that I had to be a good father, to be a resource for my children, to have a meaningful engagement, it's all of those little things that seem trite, that seem like they're just a minimal amount of time and maybe don't seem like they'd have that much impact, but those are the ones. Those are the ones that have the biggest impact. Those are the ones that move the needle for me, at least in relationship. And it's one example, but it is a powerful application if we learn to use it in our life.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, if you look at any area of your life through this lens, you can come to the quick agreement that 80% of your work is noise. 80% of, you know, like you said, your relationship with your kids is it's kind of just surface level. It's busy. It's not effective. It's kind of just there. So what's the few things that really matter and how could you amplify those? How could you deepen the value, the quality, the depth of those aspects? And when you do that, those are the things that totally game change. It's also, and this is something I was talking to you about. There's two things. I mean, there's a lot of applications to the past on this. One is honestly looking at all the ways in which you've gone 10X in the past, you know, going from crawling to walking, you know, various times when you've gone from stage to stage. And if you look at it using this 80-20 model, the idea that to go to that next level of commitment, you had to let go of 80% of who you were. 80% of it was past self. 80% of, you know, as an example, even me as a 19, 20-year-old kid choosing to go on a mission, like I had to let go of so many things. I played World of Warcraft 15 hours a week, you know, but I also, I had a lot of inbound trauma and anger against my parents that I had to choose to let go of. Yeah. And so every time you go to some next stage, you just got to acknowledge you're going to have to let go of a lot of your old identity. And that's really a big aspect of this is your identity is the story of how you're operating. And it's also the standard or the filter through which you're looking through life. And so every time, you know, so one of the invitation to the listener is look at all the times you've done that in your past. You've actually done it many times where you made some commitment and that commitment was in your future. And it was really exciting, compelling. But it was deeply intrinsically motivating in order to make the full commitment and to operate from your future, to let your future dictate who you were in the present. So much of the present had to be let go of and let go to the past rather than continuing to pull it forward, which is the 2X approach. And we've done it many, many times. And as you make it a way of life, then you can kind of see it over and over. I mean, me right now, I'm in the midst of going 10X. It's like, okay, there's a lot that I'm holding on to that's my 80%. That got me here and it was amazing and it's to be celebrated, but I can hold onto it out of security. And that's really what the 80% is it's security. You're holding onto it out of habit. You're holding onto it because it's, you know, that could be honestly surfing social media in your spare time rather than going and doing something that matters that you really want to like elevate as part of your future self. But the 80% is security. And so we have all done it many times. Anyone who's listening has done it many times where you went deep on the few things that mattered and you 10X to those few things. Me, when I was an aspiring writer, my 20% was writing blog posts and like writing and building an audience and learning how to write, think and communicate. And that ultimately allowed me to become a professional author and then letting go of blogging, you know, because it went from my 20% to my 80%, you know, it stopped being something that I could do because now with my new 10X future, blogging and growing an online audience the same way wasn't what was going to get me to writing these kind of books that we're now talking about. So we all do it. But there's one other thing about the past and that I want to share and ultimately wherever you want to go, Art. But that's that 80% of how you're currently looking at your past no longer is serving you. We all have a narrative of the past. And one key component of all of this is that your past is not a stored and objective entity, but it's a living part of who you are now. And it's not the past that determines the present. It's who you are in the present that shapes the meaning of your past. The past is always a recreation. And so it's really beautiful to know that 80% of your current frame on something, 80% of your current view, even of your own past, of anything, it could even be me in 10X is easier than 2X. 80% of my view of this book no longer is useful, for me at least. And so just realizing that 80% of how you're looking at something is no longer serving you. And that's the invitation to find what's the part that matters and how can you maximize that? And how can you let go of the stuff that no longer is useful?
This is going to take us into a couple of different veins here. As we're talking about the past, the present, and the future, one of the powerful concepts that you talk about is connecting the dots between these seasons of past, present, and future, and how it can actually be useful for us. I know as a coach, oftentimes I help the client differentiate between up to now and from now moving forward. And I look at coaching as a form of architecture and maybe therapy or revisions and review of the past and framing to be somewhat of an archaeology exercise. So moving from archaeology to architecture, you talk about connecting these dots in a powerful way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm always open and interested in your view of these things too. So I'd love to hear, you know, your thoughts on how you see it, how you utilize it. One of the things that helps me is kind of fundamental psychological understanding. It's very different from how we talk about past, present, future. We talk about past, present, and future like they're actually reality, like that they're external realities. When psychologically they're internal realities. The past, present, and future are all happening right now. How you view your past is shaping who you're being in the present. How you view your future is shaping who you're being in the present. Viktor Frankl talked deeply about that in Man's Search for Meaning, that you really, your present has no meaning if it's disconnected from the past and the future. And in Frankl's book, obviously, with the concentration camps, Man's Search for Meaning, when you lose, when your present loses connection with the future, then the present starts to like, you lose hope, you lose folk, you know, like it, you no longer have resilience. And so one thing that's really helpful for me is recognizing that who I am right now in the present is different from who I was in the past. Mm-hmm. And then taking the time to appreciate those differences. I could look back on who I was 10 years ago. And you could do that as well. Anyone who's listening can do that. Think about who you were, you know, I'm filming this, we're filming this in end of 2023-ish. So it's like, where were you in 2013? And then you could, you know, connect those dots backwards if you want. You could think about, well, what are the big moves that I've made? What are the important growth I've had? What are the important, you know, how am I different from my past self? What are the biggest wins I've had? And if you look back those 10 years, you can look for them. Whatever you look for, you create more of. And so you can do that. You can also do that for 3 years. You can look for how am I different from who I was 3 years ago and literally write it down. Like, what are the important ways you've changed? You've grown. How do you define success? What is your focus? What do you value? What are your habits? Who are your friends? Like, how do you spend your time? What's your floor? Like, your floor being your standard for what you say yes and no to. What are the things that you said yes to 3 years ago that you would never imagine saying yes to now in terms of how you spend your time, right? What are things that now are normal to you that would have been impossible 3 years ago? And then you could just do that even this year, right? Where were you at the beginning of this year? Whatever, you know, whenever you're listening to this, but in our case, you know, 8 months ago, nine of January of 2023. Like, what's the difference? How have you evolved? Like, what do you now know that you didn't know back then? How has your floor or your standard changed in terms of what you say yes to and what you say no to? What's now possible that back then would have been impossible? So I just think you can really connect the dots backwards, but that connection, just like connecting two ideas, doesn't just randomly happen. You actually have to actually make it happen. You have to actually do the creative work.
What it brings up for me is I think oftentimes we look at where we want to go in the future. And as we start to dream big, we start to profess magnificent shift that we seek in our life. I think there are times that we shut that down because we see it as an impossibility. And in one of your works, The Gap in the Gain, you talk about this recognition of the gain. And I think that's what you just described. In looking back, we've made these 10x shifts in our life. But how often do we go back and look at that and really glean and draw out confidence that you've been here, you've done this, and the possibility that lies in front of you for the change that you seek is real?
It creates what's called psychological flexibility. Psychological flexibility it has a lot to do with seeing things from new perspectives rather than rigidly holding to one view. It's being willing to acknowledge that your view is just a view, not the view, and that there's probably better views, and then letting go of the emotional attachment to that view. And so one of the challenges with how our memory works is that once we kind of get to a new place, right, we're all in a new reality, with very different perspectives than our former selves. But then we look at our past from the perspective of our current view, and we assume that that view is what our past self had. And it's not. You can't actually go back to the view of your former self. And so because we adapt so much and then we kind of put together our new model of reality from our current perspective, we fail to appreciate how much we've actually transformed, even in a short term. Like if you were to actually look back over the last 3 to 6 months, if you actually took the time to think about it, you would realize that you have done things that your former self, even 3, 6 months ago, they had never done that, never seen that. Like that's massive. And obviously, if you're going for impossible goals, if you're stretching and you know, operating from the future and letting the future shape what you're doing, but then as we're talking about, you're continuously, actively, and thoughtfully recognizing and appreciating and shaping the meaning of your past, you're shocked. I mean, honestly, if I look back on even the last 2 or 3 months, like, or even the last 2 or 3 weeks, you can start to see amazing stuff has happened. But I've just quickly adapted to it, as we do. And so I'm not acknowledging it. I'm not appreciating it. But by actually acknowledging it, by actually appreciating it, by actually, you know, stating it and saying, wow, look what has actually happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Now you're seeing massive growth, which gives you huge confidence. You're actually finding and creating evidence in your past of your desired future. If you don't do that side of things, if it's only future, only future, only future, then you're not creating as much psychological flexibility as you could. By continuously seeing that who you are in the present is different from who you were even 2, 3 weeks ago, you are seeing that you're transforming. And this increases your ability to recognize and appreciate that in your future self will be massively different as well. And that creates psychological flexibility as well. So that, as an example, if I have a seemingly impossible future self, and I actually do really strongly encourage, and we might go deep on this, but I really strongly encourage people to pursue short-term impossible goals. Because then it allows you to start filtering for them. It allows you to start looking for them. If you're not even attempting it because you think it's impossible, then of course you won't find it. You know, you find what you're searching for. It's like the idea that most people are so busy looking for bronze coins that they don't notice that there are gold coins all around them because they're not filtering for them. They don't think that that's possible for them. So yeah, I just think it's really powerful to see and appreciate that you are actually making progress that your past self, even in the not long past, would have thought was impossible, but you've just adapted to it. And the same will happen in your future.
I hoped that we would go here. And this, to me, might be one of the most pinnacle discoveries and possibilities of our life. You've talked briefly and alluded to framing. I've noticed this to be one of the critical choices in growth. And in it comes challenge and opportunity. You're a study of psychology. You're familiar with how the brain operates. We've got a reticular activating system. You talk about this filter. Couple that with the cognitive biases, recency bias, confirmation bias. We make meaning out of how we think about our lives, what we're focused on, what we've told our filter to do. Bring us into your world in your study of framing and how crucial it is in our lives.
So one way of looking at frame is narrative or story, right? So the frame is the story. And it's super important to realize that the story is just a story, right? You have a story of your past. I have a story of who Benjamin Hardy is, right? That's a frame. But it's just a story. And so it's a perspective. And it's a very subjective perspective. This is one of the things I heard from one of my psychology professors, which was, if a man says that a woman is beautiful, he's not actually describing the woman. Doesn't that make sense? Like, it's crazy, but yeah. Like, he's describing himself. He's describing right. His frame. If I say that a car is an amazing car, I'm not describing the car at all. I'm describing my preference, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just, the quote, I think, from Covey says, we don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are. And so one of the most powerful ways of transforming your life, right, is changing the frame, changing the view, changing your perspective of it. That's something that most people don't want to do. It takes back to the idea of psychological flexibility, the willingness to recognize that your current frame or your current perspective on anything has massive limitations. And when you start to develop that flexibility and a growth mindset, you become willing to let go of those limitations and to acknowledge them. I think Brené Brown said it right, where she said, rather than trying to be right, it's a lot more important to try to get it right. But if you're trying to get it right, then you've got to expose yourself to where those limitations are no longer serving you. and that we all have those limitations, which are, you know, we're all living through a frame. We're all living through a story. So I just think that reframing is really powerful. And that's really a tool for your past. It's also a tool for your future. It's a tool for anything. I really love getting really clear on the frame of your future self, mm-hmm. getting vivid about it, thinking about what you want, and then letting that frame, that future self, become the filter for who you are now. In my view, operating powerfully in the present, yes, a big part of it's how you frame the past. Because if you've got it framed in a negative and a limiting way, you know, if your past is a liability that's continuing to drain you, then obviously you're going to be stuck in the present. This just goes to the point that who you're being in the present is very shaped by how you frame your past and your future. And you want to obviously always frame your past in increasingly useful ways that empower your present and future, not disempower your present and future. But also with your future, you want to frame it in ways that give your present focus, give it direction. And that's why we talk about the 10X being a much better frame and filter for your present. Is it's so much bigger. And so it weeds you out of most of the, honestly, your present situation is a clogged up mess. All of our mm-hmm. present situations are a clogged up mess. It's just, and the only way out is through a 10X filter, because then it will help you. You know, I've heard it said, and it was honestly a written review of the book, and I just loved it, that the 10X filter leapfrogs you out of the tangled mess of your present life, because the 10X filter allows you to just view the few things that matter and then to just focus on those and let go of everything else. And so these are just simply tools.
Yeah.
They're just simply tools to moving forward effectively in the present and not getting stuck.
So why do you think it's so difficult for people to write a new story? Do you think that there's a comfortability in the pain?
We adapt to anything, right? You can adapt to being heavily obese, right? And you stop realizing that you're in a lot of pain. You can adapt to anything and you don't realize how unhealthy you are, because now it's your new normal. But it is security. It's emotionally secure because it's predictable. We know what to expect. Whereas if you reframe, now you have to expose yourself to uncertainty and to newness, to a higher perspective, to a higher level of responsibility. And also you have to acknowledge that your former way of doing things, it has negative downsides. And that's okay. They're not to be, you know, you're not, there's really not any power in being negative towards your former self. I mean, even me, I'm just gonna be honest. Like this morning, I had a really bad conversation with my daughter, and you know, we have our own challenges. And so for me, I have two choices. I can frame it in a way where everything is doom and gloom, or I can frame it in a way where I can learn from this. I can be better from this. There's hope in this. There's, you know, it's really, and so, yeah, I think that the real point is less about pain and it's more about security. People want to feel secure, and they feel secure and safe when they feel like they know what's going to happen. And even if what's going to happen is something that ultimately they don't want.
Right.
That's something that's hilarious and crazy in the literature. Yeah, people would rather have a future that they don't want, which at least they can expect, rather than one that's better, but it's not certain.
Isn't it Marianne Williamson that talks about it's our light, not our darkness, that frightens us the most?
Yeah. People would rather have a lesser future that they can be sure of than a better future that's not certain.
Wow. That's powerful. When you describe this framing,
we want that stability.
Oh yeah, we definitely want this stability, because it's safe. It's predictable. It's known. And we can exist in a comfortable space because of that familiarity, even if it's less than what we desire. And
what's sticking out to you most right now? What's sticking out most to you in this conversation, Art?
Well, it's a reminder of the power of the choices that we make. When I look at circumstances in our life, whether they be past, present, or future, how we're framing something or anything that happens to us, the circumstances in our life, we are the ones that make meaning of those circumstances. Circumstances are completely neutral. They have no meaning as an attachment to the circumstance. The sky's blue, I stub my toe, somebody cuts me off in traffic. They're all circumstances with no value, but we are the individual. We're the machine that places value or meaning or write a story about the circumstances of our life. And so the thoughts, the feelings, the actions that we take based on those stories string together and produce results in our life. So as you've talked about applying a 10X filter to the circumstances in our life and the choices that we're making and things that we experience, that filter really is it's a commitment to a way of being. And I'd heard this one time about, I don't even remember who it was. It may have been Brandon Burchard that was talking about mindset and how everybody talks about you have to have a great mindset. And he said, mindset is nothing more than a habit of thinking.
Hello, friends. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you're enjoying this week's episode. If growth, personal growth and development is your thing, and you're here learning and leaning into growth, glad you're here, glad you're part of the community. If you want more of this, make sure and hit subscribe in this podcast platform or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Search for Honor the Gift podcast and make sure and subscribe so that it shows up each week with new updates, new conversations, new learning, new ideas and concepts, again, to help us all in this journey we call growth and how we make it through life and the way that we show up for others. Also, if you are looking for more information, deeper dives into some of these conversations, and just an update to stay in the loop, you can always go to choiceisthegift.com and click on subscribe, where you'll be in the loop on things that are upcoming and more updates on this podcast. Again, thank you for being here. Now let's get back to the episode.
And so if we think about a habit of thinking and we apply that to framing and the stories that we're architecting in our life and the realities that we can create based on the stories that we write, this habit of filtering out the things that aren't our David, carving out the things that don't coincide or don't align with that highest and best future self that we want to create, that we want to bring forth. To me, this is where the rubber hits the road. Is, are we willing to apply a filter and condition ourselves to create a habit of thinking and being that's very different than our present way? And that is a choice. That's something that faces you right in the mirror. Are you willing to lean into the unknown, or are you more comfortable staying where you're at?
A lot of it has to do with freedom, right?
Yeah.
So security and freedom are two different things.
Right.
And a lot of times you keep security because you think you need it, right? It's need-based versus want-based. And so, I mean, I was just barely doing a training this week. I was in San Antonio training a company, top 60 of the top franchisees of this company. These are the top 60 franchisees. This is a company doing hundreds of millions in revenue, looking to go to a billion in a short period of time. And one of the challenges that the top franchisees have to face is this. They've never done something because they want to. They only did things because they thought they had to or needed to. They were looking to survive, not thrive. And now they're struggling with motivation. They're having a hard time letting go of the 80% because now the 80% is giving them a great life. And now they don't know what their why is, because they've never operated out of just want. You know, yeah. They've never operated out of abundance, only out of escaping scarcity. That's the difference between freedom from versus freedom to. And now they're having a hard time reaching that higher level of why and choice. And some of them have to face the hard truth of, do I really want to let go of 80% when, like, now 80% is giving me a great life? But the truth is that they're holding on to it out of security, rather than going to that next level, that next 10X filter, and, you know, and ultimately going back into the, you know, but doing it this time because you want to, not because you think you have to. And that's a transition for people. When you start operating out of want, though, and choice, then your why becomes a lot more pure. And so, yeah, I just think it's really, I love putting a quote unquote 10X filter from my future self, what I'm really excited about, what I want, and elevating it to a level where it scares me to even admit it to myself, but then shining that on my present. I mean, we apply it in really simple ways, by the way, in my team. Like, I believe it's useful to go for impossible goals every 90 days, and have no more than three. You know, you could just focus on one, But like, I've got impossible goals I'm going for before the end of the year. And they're, because they're so big and honestly, literally seemingly impossible, they become a really powerful filter for my team where it's like, okay, and then a really good question, and this comes from Dr. Alan Bernard. He's a decision-making theorist on constraint theory, but the question he always asks is, this would be impossible unless what? When the goal is really high and seemingly out of reach, and then it becomes your filter for the choices you make in the present, then it really expedites the decision-making process where you're like, okay, well, if we're going to really go for this, if we're going to really commit to this, then what's the pathway of getting there? Who are the potential people we need to get there? You know, that's where you start filtering for and finding those gold coins that you weren't looking for before. And it really can speed up the process. Doesn't mean you're going to hit the goal every time. Most of the short-term impossible goals that we go for, like at least me and my team, we don't hit them, but it doesn't really matter because it's massively filtering our present. It's allowing us to let go of a lot of the things that we've been doing that no longer matter, like that are not going to get us to that next stage. It speeds up the growth that it's inevitable. We would have just been delaying it for 2 or 3 years in more of a linear fashion. But also, like, we get to decide what it means. So like at the end of those 90 days, we go for one or two impossible goals. We hit zero of them. Okay, so do we feel like losers now? Well, that depends on how you frame your past. If we want to frame it in a way that we're losers because we didn't hit the goal, right? That's, I think, what Dan would call the gap. Instead, we can look at all the ways. Like, just as you apply a 10x filter from your future to your present to simplify your present and weed out the 80% and find and focus on those, call it those 20% pathways, those gold coins, you also apply the same 10x filter from your present towards your past, right? Because you're the 10x version of your past self. And right. So you can apply a negative filter to your past or a 10x filter. And so when you apply the 10x filter from your present to your past, you start to see all the amazing ways in which you're growing, transforming. And so you start mining gold from your past as well, which only compounds, you know, just the beauty and the joy in the present.
You talk about freedom. I would submit, as we're having this conversation and I'm trying to connect some of these dots, I would submit that the essence of freedom is the recognition of choice and the power it holds in our life.
Yeah, I was told by one of my psychology professors a similar thing. He called agency the possibility of doing otherwise, or of having otherwise, or of experiencing otherwise than what you have right now. And I think that possibility is there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will view their lives as limited choices, or that their circumstances have created a path that doesn't allow for them to make shifts in their life. And so they'll seek to blame circumstance, or seek to blame, you know, the present, I guess, evaluation of life to be something that submits a roadblock for them. I always just go back to this place that in any given moment, any second, the grandest gift we've all been given is choice. And that's massive power in our life to choose in any moment what you're going to do with it. How are you going to proceed? What meaning are you going to make of something?
But it's all, yeah, 100%. We don't realize we have so much choice and you know, to the idea of the frame that we actually get to choose. And but also choose what you want, mm-hmm. right? You can choose a 2x future or a 10x future.
Right.
And if you choose the higher future, yes, that choice is going to require and demand a different path than a linear future. But the choice is still yours. I remember hearing the quote, and I think it was even just in the classic book, Think and Grow Rich, right? Which is like, I bargained in life for a penny and life would pay no more. You know, just that like any wage you had asked of life, life would have willingly paid. And so you choose your future self. I think so many people are waiting for that future to find them versus mm-hmm. realizing like, no, you actually choose. You can choose a future that looks a lot like your present, or you can choose a future that's very purposeful. But yes, that future will change your present. Even Dan says, and I love it, that the only way to make your present better is by making your future bigger. But that's a choice. And then you can choose to go through with it or not. And it's really between you and you. The bigger future invites a lot more depth. You know, it invites you to be a lot more honest with yourself. It invites you, it's going to invite a lot higher peaks and a lot lower valleys. The valleys being challenging hard truths that are going to force you, you know, a valley is simply a frame of an experience. Mm-hmm. It's your reaction to an experience. It's a challenge. You know, I had a valley moment with my daughter today, but it was because of how I viewed it. I can turn that valley into a peak by reframing it and learning from it and being better, not bigger. But I think one of the, there's two massive insights, honestly. I mean, there's so many insights, but there's two massive insights that come when you start going for a 10X future. One is that it's going to force you into quality, not quantity. The 20%, not the 80. You can't be doing 100 things. It's the difference between good to great. You got to let go of everything that's good and do the few things that are great. Extreme mastery, right? If you want to go for a really high future, you can't be mediocre. And so you got to do a few things at 10X quality. Become an innovator, become really good. If I want my books to sell over 10 million copies, right? Or if I want to make 10 times the money in a specific way, I've got to become 10 times better and more specific. And so that's the good to great. So that's one, is that if you want to go for the bigger future, you've got to become 10 times better at what you do. That's what Dan calls unique ability. Other people would call it mastery. You got to do less, but way better. And you can. Your future self can be 10 times better than you, 10 times more capable, 10 times more skilled, 10 times more specific. You can be, like, literally, my past self, versions of my past self wouldn't have known that I could, you know, become skilled at training leadership teams and stuff like that, right? But you can become 10 times better at what you do. The second piece, though, is the leadership piece, that you can't do it alone. And so that's when you're going to have to start to develop partnerships. Often when an entrepreneur, they still kind of operate from like a 80% and a 2X lens. And so like they only bring on team members. They bring on 80% team members, where like they're people that are not that great, but they're just filling a role. The other thing that you'll learn, and you know, eventually you'll learn if you really want to go for this, is that to go 10X, yes, you've got to become 10 times better at what you do, but you also have to get 10 times better who's that you partner with, that you team with, even that you hire. You can't just bring on people to cover the 80% because you don't want to do it anymore. No, you got to get people that are so good that they actually could train you. And this is something that people, you know, I was even talking to my dad. He works for this company and he's so busy, which is an evidence of a 2X culture, because the CEOs hire these young early 20 somethings that need intense training and the turnover's continuous. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, why? Because they don't want to invest in really good people.
Right.
Oh, okay, great. So this company is not going to go 10X. We already know that. So those two things, you got to become brilliant and you got to team with people that are increasingly brilliant if you want to do this. And that you ultimately let people be in their lane. And that's where huge changes happen.
Okay. We have been taught well on this concept of 10X is easier than 2X. And we could go on for many hours and days and probably months diving into it even deeper. I want to shift gears for a bit. One of my promises to this audience and anybody that might download this episode in the future is that they get to know these guests, people that have had an impact in my life, a little bit better. Great mentors, people of significant influence in our lives, have three things in common. They teach us how to think, they challenge us, and they role model the way. I've watched you and engaged with you over the years that we've become friends, and you check these boxes. And so I want to maybe peel back the layer here and get to know you a little bit better, just for the sake of my audience engaging with a really good human being. So as you think about the people in your own life, Ben, that have had significant influence and impact, give me three people that come to mind, powerful influence in your life, and why.
Definitely my parents continuously have an incredible impact on me for completely different reasons. A lot of it is, there's a quote in the book, The Body Keeps the Score, which is a book on trauma. And it's all about how the parent-child relationship is one of the most fundamental to mental health. Even if your parents are gone, like right past, like mm-hmm. you still have a relationship with them. Right. And that's the frame, right? That's the story. And so my parents give me constant love and support, but also they're kind of like a factor or a situation that comes up against me that invites me to rethink and look at things. And so they're very loving and compassionate. So it's a very safe, loving, compassionate opportunity where I get massive support and I'm constantly growing. And I just am having increasing gratitude for my parents. My wife as well is just another amazing person in my life where she has such different strengths and perspectives than me. And over time, we're becoming such a better team at rather than her way versus my way. It's very much her strengths with my strengths, and that we're a lot more open to each other's perspectives faster. And we don't need to, it doesn't need to be like one view or another, but it's two views coming together and ultimately transforming, you know, like this oneness, right? Unity to ultimately the higher view, right? When the mm-hmm. sum becomes, or the whole becomes different from the sum of the parts, just situationally, like in getting there faster, you know, even just like dealing with new situations or opportunities, and me sharing a view where she was just totally not expecting that, but quickly seeing her flexibility, and she's grown a lot in that. But yeah, I'm just massively indebted to her and grateful for her. And then I guess another one would be, let's see here, my kids. But in this case, I'll talk about my daughter, Jordan. She is like someone like my kids in general. I actually gave a TEDx talk on this like a while ago about how when I became a foster parent, and I became a foster parent literally the same time I was trying to become a professional author. This was in 2015, and I was just starting on my path to really like taking it seriously, blogging online. And a lot of people would have thought that being a foster parent would have slowed that down, but it didn't. It actually deepened and intensified my why. It gave me a massive constraint, right? Like now we went from zero kids to three, a lot of time freedom to seemingly none. Right. And so it was a really cool constraint, but it's still a similar constraint where like it's a continuous invitation to be better, not bitter, right? Like and so like even just my situation this morning, it's very much like a huge gift. And I even heard it once said that you realize over time as a parent that you're less of the teacher to them and they're more of the teacher to you. And so I'm really, really lucky. You know, that may sound crazy, but I'm really lucky to have six kids. I'm really lucky to have adopted these three older ones because, man, are they a teacher to me in a beautiful way. Like mm-hmm. I am, and it really enables me, if I choose to let it, to succeed out here in the work world if I want it to, but it also just invites me to be a lot better of a human being. So those are obviously like parents, spouse, kids, as basic as it gets. I could have shared a lot of mentors and stuff, but those are the ones that like are continuously like transforming me.
Love it. I definitely can see that and can echo much of that, especially when it comes to our children. There's just a tremendous opportunity to be taught and to learn and to develop alongside these beautiful souls. So guiding principles
in your life. One sec. I'll go to guiding principles, but I will give one more, and I will give Dan Sullivan some beautiful credit. I'm really grateful I got to write those three books with him. Ultimately, 10X is easier than 2X is our final one together, but he's a brilliant thinker and transformed my life with his thinking so much. So I'm just want to just throw that one out there. Did you want to go guiding principles?
Yeah. Few guiding principles in your life.
It's kind of interesting because I feel like my I don't have a static view of principles. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I operate with, you know, two static principles, but my view of the principles is never static. What I mean by that is like my view of things is always changing. One crucial principle that really matters to me is that it's not the past that shapes the present. It's always the present that shapes the past. So we've been talking about that aggressively. Yeah. It's also similarly, it's not the present that shapes the future. It's the future that shapes the present. And so that's a principle and an idea that fundamentally influences how I approach so many things. It enables me to never be the victim of my past. It also empowers me to continuously learn from, transform my experiences into growth and meaning, and to take even my own seeming mistakes, right, and quickly turn them into growth, meaning, learning. Like, so that's one, you know, and ultimately always letting the future dictate who I am and what I do rather than sure. just doing something because I've done it in the past. Like that's a principle. In terms of like basic print, you know, like pulling it down as close as I can, and these aren't necessarily principles, they're probably more practices. Yeah, it's probably a mixture of both, but like absolutely faith in God, relationship with God, huge, everything, constantly learning from that, feeling guided, you know, feeling, even if I actually don't quote unquote feel the Spirit, like actually just looking at my life for evidence that I'm actually being guided. There's episodes or periods of my life where I feel a lot closer to God than others. But if I actually just filter for it, right, maybe I haven't actually felt, call it that whole peace and assurance or good feelings of mushiness, right? That sometimes we relate to feeling close to God or, but I've gone through chapters where I don't really feel that very much. I feel it way less maybe than I did before, but if I actually look at my life right now, and if I even look on the recent past, even call it the last month, I can see massive guidance, and closeness and transformation and miracles. And so just, expecting that, looking for it, feeling it, creating it, that's something I'm always wanting more of. I guess one other one, I mean, there's so many, gosh, I don't know. I'll probably just stop there. I mean, we could go forever, but sure. There's probably so many other guiding principles, you know, that continually help me that I'm just not thinking through right now.
Sure. Thank you for sharing what you have.
Actually, can I say one more?
Sure.
I think it's always a surprise, but just this idea of important versus urgent, which fits with future over present, rather than letting the present 80% dictate things. When you actually put the important first and you actually do it, you can make such leaps.
Yeah.
It's so easy to accidentally let a month go by because you were caught in the urgent. But like literally in the next month, I'm going to end up like finishing the next book, right? And that next book is going to 10X my future. It's going to create huge peaks. But if I got caught just in the urgencies of what's going on now and didn't prioritize that important, and that's a huge aspect of 10X, obviously, is slowing down time and going deep rather than shallow and like cutting out the things that don't meet the filter. But like as an example, like between now and the end of the year, I am on your podcast because it's very, it deeply met the filter in so many different ways. A lot of it's just because of who you are. But between now and the end of the year, we actually canceled 20 podcasts that were scheduled. And a lot of those were massive podcasts. We canceled 20 podcasts because we filtered them through the impossible goals. And it was like, if we want to achieve these two or three ridiculous things, Ben, me and my assistant cannot do those 20 podcasts. Like your schedule won't meet for it if you're absolutely committed to those two or three impossible goals. And I was like, those things were pretty good. Like they seemed like they were in the 20%, but yeah. Because of the new impossible goals, they became part of the 80%. And so it's just to the idea of important versus urgent and continuously raising the bar on what that means when you actually do invest the time into what's important. Wow. The leverage for your future self is huge. I know my future self is so grateful because over these next 2 months, I didn't do those podcasts, but I instead wrote that book that I know is going to 10X my future. And so it's just the important versus urgent and raising the bar on what that means and truly letting it be a filter and sometimes having to make some challenging decisions. It's always paid me back. And I think that that's where people's value of time 10Xs versus just kind of being on the hamster wheel.
Thank you for that. Honored that this podcast would.
It met the filter big time, man. I love talking to you, man. I love talking to you. You reached out in an inspired way. You're an inspired person, man. So I don't take it lightly when you reach out.
That last principle that you brought up, it brings to mind one of my all-time favorite quotes from a great author, Chuck Blakeman. He said, "Don't let the tyranny of the urgent outweigh the priority of the important." And I think you just hit that.
That's it, man.
That's a great definition.
That's the 80%, man. The 80% is swarming, man. It'll swarm at you. And you just got to remember, this is the weird part. It's your own psychology. The 80% is your psychology. We may blame it on externals.
Mm-hmm.
We may blame it on things like money or on busyness or, yes. But literally it's your psychology. The tyranny of the urgent is literally your need for security and saying yes to things that you just don't have a high enough filter and standard to now say no to. You haven't yet made a committed decision towards that true priority. And so you're blaming it on externals, but it's really just noxious weeds coming in because you've still said yes to it, you know, out of security, rather than letting the future truly that you want be a filter and say, you know, that whole idea of important priority, you're not just actually saying no and then being powerful in your choices.
So I ask every guest this question and I get a different answer from every guest. And I love that. So I'm going to ask you, what does living true mean for you?
Such a beautiful, hard question. So I like the quote, all progress starts by telling the truth. I also like a similar quote, which is, you're as sick as your secrets. And so one of the ways that I feel is living true is all, you know, obviously being really honest with yourself, honest about what's going on, honest about the situation. So much of people's addictions come because they're not being honest. And I found that even just by being honest, by being just laying it out without even ability to fix it yet, the act of just laying things out and being honest solves over 80% of the situation.
Yeah.
Truly. Because now you've kind of neutralized the, you know, your attachment to it.
Right.
And your need to kind of, you know, so, but yeah, I think a lot of it's about just, I mean, living a true life or a truthful life is just about being honest with yourself, honest with what you most value, honest with what you most believe, honest when those things change. You know, I was honest that I wanted to do those Sway podcasts, but I was also honest when the situation demanded me to let them go. And so it's just about the continuous being real and honest and true with yourself as that's transforming and evolving. And it will continue to transform and evolve. It's not like there's one, like what I was talking about with principles. I don't think it's, maybe the principles themselves are actually static. I don't really know. But at least what's honest and the truth right now in your world is not static. Yes, there is truth. God is truth. You know, God is real. God, you know, God is love. But what is most important, what is most truthful for you right now is not static. And so for me, I was being honest and true when I wanted those podcasts, and then a higher truth, and you know, which was my impossible goal, which I really wanted, I'm excited for, the important, made that old truth irrelevant, and it became part of the trivial mini. And I think it's just always letting the highest truth be the filter for what you say yes to and what you say no to.
Excellent. I love that that definition, personal definition from you. Appreciate that insight.
Very sloppy definition.
No. It's a very interrogative question that challenges us to see what is truth and living into truth mean in our life. And so I always love the nuance of individual guests and how they see that in their life.
The most basic version is God is truth. That's the most basic.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's on the horizon? What are you excited about?
I'm excited about my next 10X over the next 3 years. That's going to be personal and spiritual. It's going to be, you know, my family, my faith. It's going to be my learning and teaching, writing, continuing to write more books. I'm writing a book right now. I'm not going to dispel or disclose the title of it, but really excited about that. I think it's going to be a vehicle for the next big jump. I'm excited. I mean, in terms of like situational, I think I love the quote that lessons are repeated until they're learned. Mm-hmm. And every next level of your life is going to require, if you don't learn the lessons, you're going to have to repeat the level, essentially.
Yeah.
And so there's some lessons, you know, and I look at the level as your floor, right? So it's the raising of the floor.
Right.
I feel, you know, and it also fits to the idea that when the student is ready, the teacher appears, because now you're ready to actually learn the lessons or live the lessons. And so, yeah, I think some of the big, you know, things that I'm now really ready and committed, and commitment being the similar thing as your floor, committed, super committed to writing just ultimately the best books I truly can, but also to partner and build a business that, you know, can grow, scale, and I'll probably end up selling. But that business, the fun part about it is that I really want to put together just the most valuable, call it psychology/transformational tools that in my mind, I mean, I just want to just put together something that's truly so valuable that it works, you know, in a really big way. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's just fun. Yeah, and just spending time with my kids. I mean, a lot of it's just the simple nuance on the ground, you know, just hanging out with my family, doing family trips and stuff.
Yeah. Where can people find you and stay connected to not just you, but your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, you know, BenjaminHardy.com is my main website, BenjaminHardy.com. There's really not that much there. You could always email me if you want to hire me, like for a bigger format thing, like a keynote or a leadership training, that's there. FutureSelf.com is where you could opt in and get free Kindle versions of the books, you know, free Kindle of 10X is easier than 2X, just put your email in, free Kindle version of Be Your Future Self Now. So FutureSelf.com is there. And then I would just say YouTube. YouTube's where I have been creating content lately. And so you could always just subscribe and watch the YouTube videos. There is a podcast version of that called the Dr. Benjamin Hardy Show, where we just stick the YouTube clips, YouTube videos and trainings and stuff like that into a podcast form.
Awesome. Well, you have powerful content more than anything. I love the way that you think. I love the contribution that you're making to this world. It's been an impact in my life. 30 seconds on the rooftop, shout out to the world. What would you give as your very best advice?
Gosh, man, your questions are hard hitters. I really like the quote, all progress starts by telling the truth. I really do. I think that start telling the truth. All progress starts by telling the truth. Just tell the truth to yourself more. Tell the truth about what you're struggling with. Telling the truth about what you're dealing with. Telling the truth about what you absolutely want. Not because you have to, but because you want to. The abundance. We start being really honest with yourself. That's the whole idea of the David that we were talking about before. Peeling away everything that you're not. That's when you can really start making huge progressions. And that's when you hit what we would call in psychology intrinsic motivation. And a massive flow state is when you really just start being honest with yourself and not afraid to tell other people the truth. So, yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. We can put a stamp on that. Dr. Hardy, sincere, deeply felt gratitude for having you here today. I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate your mentorship. And I appreciate the impact that you continue to have in my life. Thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely. Happy to be with you, Art.
Thanks, man. For those tuning in, remember that growth is always a choice. Until next time, my friends, make it a great one. And remember to always honor the gift.